I'm Jamie Colby, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, March 28th, 2018. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. After a recent string of deadly shootings, a retired Supreme Court justice calls for a repeal of the Second Amendment.
He is clearly pegging this to very emotional, tragic events that have happened in this country over the last few years.
I'm Dave Anthony. President Trump is trying to be the bull in a china shop.
It's probably one of the reasons I was elected, maybe one of the main reasons.
And I'm Brian Kilmeade. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
A retired Supreme Court justice says it's time to repeal the Second Amendment, the one that gives people the right to bear arms. This is not the first time Justice John Paul Stevens has talked about this, but now the 97-year-old who retired from the court 8 years ago has written an op-ed, a brief one, applauding this past weekend's March for Life, driven by the Parkland, Florida students, where 17 were killed in a mass shooting last month. Stevens wrote, "Rarely in his lifetime has he seen the type of civic engagement school children and their supporters demonstrated. They demand our respect and reveal the broad public support for legislation to minimize the risk of mass killings of school children and others in our society." He acknowledged their effort to raise the age limit on gun purchases and the effort for more comprehensive background checks. But then he said this, quote, "The demonstrators should seek more effective and more lasting reform. They should demand a repeal of the Second Amendment." A key case regarding the Second Amendment came before the justices in 2008, when Stevens was still on the court. It was called the District of Columbia versus Heller. There, the justices argued whether Washington, D.C. could enact a ban on handguns and require residents to keep legally owned firearms unloaded and unassembled in their homes.
And I remember, there were trigger locks and other things that essentially the plaintiffs were arguing amounted to a ban on guns.
Shannon Bream is host of Fox News at Night.
Because they were so restrictive, they made it nearly impossible for people to have gun ownership as individuals in their homes and be able to operate or use them in any way that they felt would be helpful for self-defense. I remember sitting in those arguments and Chief Justice Roberts saying, walking through this scenario of hearing something in his house, and he's trying to find his glasses, and now he's trying to find a key, and now he's trying to find the gun, and he's trying to unlock it, he's trying to find the ammo, unlock that, get the gun loaded. And, his kind of walking through the scenario made it sound very much like he felt it did amount to a ban on actually having that gun and being able to use it when it counted for self-defense. So he was in that 5-4 majority there. But Justice Scalia said, "We're not saying that there cannot be any reasonable regulations on guns. That's not at all what the court is saying. There are certainly," and he pointed out specifically felons and the mentally ill, certain places that you wouldn't want to have guns or have them very heavily regulated. So he wasn't against reasonable regulations. But, as Chief Justice Roberts pointed out during the argument, and as the five who came together and agreed, what these regulations in D.C. did was essentially rob people of individual Second Amendment rights, which they found actually do exist based on the amendment.
Shannon, Justice Stevens also brings up the NRA in what is a very brief op-ed, going back to the late 60s to the mid-80s, when he said Chief Justice Warren Burger was in charge of the court. And he quoted from Burger at the time, who said that the NRA was perpetrating, quote, "one of the greatest pieces of fraud, I repeat, fraud on the American public by special interest groups that I've ever seen in my lifetime." How does bringing up Burger's comments about the NRA now make his case for repealing the Second Amendment?
I think it definitely takes another swipe at the NRA, which is a very popular target these days. It's interesting to me because I think there are actually all kinds of gun rights organizations out there. The NRA is obviously the most prominent, but there are many other groups out there who advocate for gun rights and gun safety and gun protection, but allowing lawful people to have guns. But they clearly are the biggest name and the biggest target. So I think that it just piles on to that argument. Justice Thomas is somebody who was on the court at the time of Heller. He is there now, and he is one of these advocates who says, listen, the Second Amendment gets such second-class treatment, basically, by the court. He was frustrated earlier this year. They decided not to weigh in on this California law that had a 10-day waiting period for a gun purchase. There were exceptions, but he said, basically, you know, would this court stand by if there was a 10-day waiting period on abortions, if there was a 10-day waiting period on striking down racist speech, if there was a 10-day waiting period on allowing police to access information without getting a warrant? He said, you know, we care about the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, and we hear cases on these favored, quote, amendments all the time. But he said, you know, we basically treat the Second Amendment, in his view, like an orphan. It does not get the respect of this court that so many of the other amendments do. So, you know, even within the court, there are tensions about, even though the most recent ruling in 2008 and there was a follow-up within a couple of years after that out of Chicago, have said, yes, people have individual rights to guns. They also, you know, states and localities are free to restrict them in many ways. And Justice Thomas is one of those who thinks some of those laws have gotten so restrictive. And if this court, meaning the Supreme Court, doesn't hear cases challenging some of those state laws, they're only going to become more and more restrictive. So he's kind of a lone voice on that right now on the court. But there are a number of interesting gun cases that have come to them. And you got to think that there are going to be state legislatures. We saw what happened in Florida already, some pretty comprehensive you know, legislation there that has already been subject to a lawsuit. And a number of these retailers who have said, we won't sell guns, we'll continue to sell them, but not to people under 21. A number of lawsuits out there now by those who fall in the 18, 19, 20-year-old category saying, you can't deny me my Second Amendment rights based on my age. So there'll be no shortage of litigation. It's just a matter of time of seeing when the Supreme Court feels like it wants to roll in and get involved again.
And finally, Shannon, when we talk about repealing an amendment included in the Bill of Rights, that would be quite an undertaking, right? I mean, that would require amending the Constitution, and Article 5 would come into play?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think about it. I've sort of had a little Schoolhouse Rock moment with myself because my husband and I were talking about this today. And I'm like, wait a minute, you go back and you have a couple of different paths that you have to do and go through this and three quarters of this and two thirds of that. And then the Senate and the House have to do. And I'm like, they can't even agree almost on anything. I can't imagine that you're going to get, I think it's three quarters of the state legislatures to do this. And then majorities, I think either two thirds or three fourths in Congress. I need to go back and dust off my civics book. But it's a massive lift.
Right.
I mean, it's not something that would be easily done. There's a lot of passion and a lot of emotion, rightfully so, after these tragic events that have cost young lives. But at the end of the day, when things settle in a little bit and people cool off a little bit, I don't know that I can see you convincing three quarters of state legislatures or of Congress here in D.C. to do anything, and certainly not restrict guns. I could be wrong. I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Now, back to that major Supreme Court decision, the District of Columbia versus Heller, for a second. The late Justice Antonin Scalia addressed this on Fox News Sunday in 2012. He wrote the majority opinion in that case, which concluded there is an individual right to bear arms. But he acknowledged there is some room for limitations on the Second Amendment.
What the opinion in Heller said is that it will have to be decided in future cases. What limitations upon the right to keep and bear arms are permissible. Some undoubtedly are, because there were some that were acknowledged at the time. For example, there was a tort called affrighting, which if you carried around a really horrible weapon just to scare people, like a head axe or something, that was, I believe, a misdemeanor.
The NRA responded to Justice Stevens' op-ed, saying he's long had the opinion that individuals do not have the right to own a gun for self-protection, adding that the real effort here, including the weekend's March for Our Lives, is not common sense regulations, but banning guns altogether. David Hogg was one of the Parkland students who helped organize the march, and he clarified where he stands.
They've made it seem like I'm trying to take people's guns and I'm against the Second Amendment. My father is a retired FBI agent. I have guns in my house. I'm not going against the Second Amendment. I'm trying to push for common sense gun reform and mental illness reform so that we can make sure that these individuals that have a criminal background, that are mentally unstable, and have a history of domestic violence are no longer able to get a gun. I don't understand what is so hard to understand about this.
But Alan Gottlieb, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation, isn't buying it.
Well, most of us in the gun rights movement have always said that the gun prohibition lobby's agenda was really gun prohibition, even though they try and talk about common sense gun control or gun safety. Now I really think they've really, you know, come out of the closet, so to speak, and they're showing their true colors. So yeah, it sort of reinforces everything we've been saying about what their agenda is. And it is, you know, ban whatever kind of gun you can today and take away the rest tomorrow.
Alan, the Supreme Court's addressed a number of Second Amendment cases, but you've said it actually is not really settled law yet. What remains to be addressed?
At the Supreme Court level, the right to carry has still not been addressed, as well as the right for government to ban certain types of firearms that are still commonly owned, and according to the Heller decision, commonly owned firearms are protected. So things like assault weapons have not got to the Supreme Court yet either. So the right to carry, the right to have, you know, a semi-automatic firearm, certain accessories, zoning ordinances that zone gun stores out of business that don't allow them to be in various counties in the United States. There's still a whole long way of Second Amendment litigation that needs to get to the high court.
The Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence provided us with a statement that said the Supreme Court is in agreement. The Second Amendment allows for common sense gun reforms that the Brady Campaign and most Americans support. Adding, the reason we don't have what they call common sense gun laws is because of the NRA and Congress, not the Constitution or the courts.
This is Brian Kilmeade with your Fox News commentary coming up.
First, it was aluminum and steel that President Trump slapped tariffs on, with some exemptions for Canada and others. Now, China.
For many, many years, we've had this abuse by many other countries and groups of countries that were put together in order to take advantage of the United States. And we don't want that to happen. We're not going to let that happen.
So last week, he announced he would put tariffs on some Chinese imports. And China threatened to retaliate, leading to fears of a trade war, which sent stocks tumbling. The Dow had its worst week in more than 2 years. But there's been some rebounding at the start of this week.
I think most things when the president does them may seem, you know, over the top.
Maria Bartiromo hosts Mornings with Maria on the Fox Business Network and Sunday Morning Futures on the Fox News Channel.
But it's all part of his strategy of the art of the deal. And I think this was also one of those situations where he came out swinging with these aluminum and steel tariffs, only to create a lot of upset by globalists in particular, who really do not want to see a trade war and do not want to see this kind of pushback to other countries because of these deficits. And yet then he comes out and says that there are all these exemptions. As far as China is concerned, look, China has been stealing our intellectual property for years. And if you're a businessman operating in America and trying to get a foothold in China, you know exactly what China has been doing, because you know, in order to get a foothold in China, you have to give up a lot, and even then you won't even get a fair shake. For example, let's say you're Ford Motor and you want to open up a production line in China. The first thing that they're going to tell you to do is give up all your technology. Tell us exactly what's in the cars. Tell us the technology you're using, how AI is changing the automobile business, and then maybe you can have a foothold in China.
Why would you want to do that if you're Ford? Why would you do that?
The only reason to do it is to get an opportunity to sell to the 1.3 billion person population. Everybody wants, I mean, it's no secret that that is the largest population, you know, three or four times the size of America, that you want to sell stuff to. So you want to sell goods to the Chinese, cars included, but the Chinese government will not allow you to without giving up all your secrets. So that's what American businesses have been dealing with for years. And in financial services, if you want to own anything, it's not happening. You can own a joint venture, but it's not a majority stake. You will only be able to own 49%. If you're lucky, you can own 49% of a joint venture. These have been the rules of the road in China for the longest time, and American businesses are aware of that. In fact, there are 10 sectors in China that the government has deemed off limits to foreigners. They include defense, they include food, they include financial services. All of these sectors, these industries, are deemed off limits to foreigners. So the only way you're even going to get a shot at anything is if you're part of a joint venture and you own a partial stake in that joint venture. But no way, no how are you ever going to get a fair shake in terms of being on an equal footing with a Chinese company, which is, of course, government owned. And that's the way it is. The other thing is, they're doing something called technology transfer. And they've been doing this transfer of technology for a decade now. What they do is they're involved in 10% of all venture deals in the U.S. So they buy, they invest, they've got a lot of money to invest. They invest in venture deals in the U.S. They acquire companies or invest in companies that they believe are creating things for the new economy. And then they transfer that technology from that American company to Chinese company with the goal of eventually they will compete against that American company. And by the way, they'll probably win. And the president knows this as well.
So when the president comes out, when the president comes out then and says, we've been ripped off for years and this is going to stop and we're going to change this, how do imposing tariffs, how does that change all that technology and intellectual property theft?
Well, I think this is a really important question that you ask because it doesn't. And it makes it more expensive for China. By slapping tariffs on $60 billion of goods that they're trying to get into the U.S., it just gets more money out of China. But there's a second part to his China restriction program, and that is restrictions on investment. As we speak right now, the Treasury is writing these rules. There will be restrictions in terms of Chinese companies owning American companies and doing this transfer technology that they are doing. You're right. Tariffs are not going to stop this. It's only going to make it more expensive. Restrictions on investment may. But there's no doubt that China has massive aspirations. They want to be the largest economy, not only from an economic standpoint, but from a military standpoint.
The trade war fear on Wall Street, though, is if we make the products more expensive when it comes to China sending stuff here, it would affect, say, soybean farmers and apple farmers and pork producers and all kinds of other products that we send over there. How do we stop that reciprocal nature and effect on our economy with that?
Well, I don't think we're going to be able to stop it. I mean, look, I think what China did last week in terms of coming out and saying, oh, really? Well, you want to slap $60 billion of tariffs on those goods. We're going to slap tariffs on $3 billion of goods coming into China. I think that was just a gesture because obviously it's not commensurate. It's, you know, $60 billion versus $3 billion. China is basically telling the world, well, we're not going to roll over, so we're going to do something too. But it was such a small amount that it was clear that it really wasn't. They don't want to get into any fights. Look, let's face it. China has a $375 billion surplus with the United States. That means we have a $375 billion deficit with China. They're not going to mess around with that.
President Trump has been very vocal about trying to bring back manufacturing the way it used to be in America, and that would maybe help to stop our need to import some goods from China, for instance. But it seems like it's hard to go back 50 years to the way it was.
Well, I think it is. And I think what the president is trying to do is, you know, save certain industries like aluminum and steel, which, you know, the world is changing around them, but also invest in new industries. And that's the worry as it relates to China, because you know what China is trying to become number one in? Robotics, AI, biotech, shipping, all of the industries of tomorrow. So, yes, you're right. The president is talking about manufacturing and getting manufacturing going again in the United States because there are so many jobs that have been lost as a result of technology. He'll be able to do that to an extent, but then there is also something called technology and advancement that some of those jobs, frankly, are gone forever.
Now, President Trump has often pointed to Wall Street and record stock market gains last year as evidence he's doing a good job. And last week, he said this about the economy at a Republican fundraiser.
The economy's maybe the best it's ever been. Ever. I think ever. How has it ever been better?
Well, actually, there are signs it's slowing down. GDP growth last fall was 2.5%, less than the two previous quarters. And some economists are forecasting growth could drop under 2% to start this year, with several months of declining retail sales.
I think things have slowed down from a couple of quarters ago, for sure. But I think right now, the focus is going to turn back to earnings and the corporate story, which is very strong. Remember, the quarter is over this week. So we are going to begin the second quarter next week. And by all accounts, we're expecting S&P 500 earnings to be up 16% in the first quarter. That is a very good number. For 2018, we're still expecting S&P 500 earnings to be up 18% for the year. I think that the tax plan initially created a lot of excitement and anticipation that things will get better, so you saw a lot of money go to work on the part of corporations. Remember, for the last decade, corporates have been sitting on cash because the regulatory environment was so strict and severe that large companies had to hire lots of lawyers, lots of compliance agents to counter and to, you know, adhere to all of the rules and regulations. Then Trump comes comes in and he starts rolling back regulations. There was a lot of excitement. So at that point, businesses started putting money to work. There was a little bit of animal spirits unleashed. Now we're starting to see the result of the tax plan. We're seeing an impact on earnings. We're seeing companies start putting their plans together for a year or the next 2 years. So things slowed down a bit. But I think there's a long runway to this tax plan. There's going to be a lot of impact on corporate earnings. There's going to be impact on individuals as well. It will be a positive impact. So I have no doubt that growth will pick up again.
Maria Bartiromo, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Download and subscribe to original podcast from Fox News Radio.
It's time to get caught up on what's happened and what's next. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Brian Kilmeade.
What's on your mind?
So let's talk tariffs. I know normally that's not sexy, but man, is it apropos. Because it looks as though some of the things that the president said, even in the 80s on Phil Donahue's show, in Oprah when he came back, as we talked, as he was just a famous executive, even before The Apprentice, he always said we're being taken to the cleaners on these bad trade deals. Almost sounding like Ross Perot for years. So now we find out that the tariffs that the president went out weren't something that was ill-conceived. They have sent a message on aluminum and steel that we don't like the current situation. And before it came into a trade war, it looks like a trade deal. And right now the administration's about to announce, we think within a week, that there's going to be a reduction in steel purchases to the tune of 30% from South Korea. So, in other words, they're going to allow 30% less exports into our country at any given time in turn for a few things. Now, the Trump's talking tough with China, easing U.S. sanctions to China's market. They keep certain industries just entirely out, treating domestic and foreign firms equally. Can you imagine that? We do. Increasing U.S. semiconductor imports and will no longer require U.S. firms to hand over intellectual property. That's why we killed the Qualcomm deal. Part of the reason. Because they buy stuff to get the company to make those people rich, fine. But they take all their innovation. Because Chinese aren't known for the innovation. The Japanese are. They're known for very hardworking. They take something and they mass produce it at a very low rate because they don't pay their people enough. Congratulations on that. Not exactly the hallmark of human rights. So we put the brakes on it. And I think that's important. So far, you see not a war, you see negotiations. This is Brian Kilmeade.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.